This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
Two things that I don't love doing, and I'm about to do both of them. One, I don't love covering something that's a purported racial controversy just because the press says it's a racial controversy. And I don't love going to people that are black or Asian or Jewish or whatever the affected ethnic group or whatever the case may be. Group is and asking them to comment here. You're black. Comment on this issue that has to do with black people. I am about to violate both of those rules as I welcome once again Dominic Carter, veteran broadcast journalist, happens to be black. Hello, Dominic.
No,
well, I didn't want to. It's radio. A lot of people may not know.
I am really pissed at you.
Oh my!
I am really pissed off at you, Mr. Morano.
Oh boy.
So. There in the cafeteria,
yes,
there is a delicious cake.
Mm.
It's like a chocolate cake.
It's a chocolate peanut butter. Peanut butter icing.
Yeah. Right. And I think I heard you say before last week that you love peanut butter.
I do. Okay. I do like peanut butter.
Okay. And it's got a Reese's on top and all that. Because you do know I'm diabetic, right?
Right. But you're taking the miracle drugs.
Right. But yeah, but I don't have the body that Oprah does, you know? So I walked into the cafeteria to get some coffee and it was calling me. And I tried to fight. I tried to walk away anyway. So let me know when you bring in cake so I know to stay away from the cafeteria.
Duly noted. I should have given you a heads up, but you were on the air.
But please tell me that your wife didn't make that cake.
No, my cousin Deanna made it. Why?
That cake is delicious. Yeah,
no, my cousin Deanna made it. Wednesday is my wife's birthday.
Happy birthday to your wife.
We'll do the whole show on Wednesday.
Okay. Wait. Your cousin can cook like that?
Oh, yeah. She's quite a baker. She's an attorney, but she used to have a whole baking
business.
She's
an attorney and she can cook like that?
She's married. Don't get any ideas.
So she can bring home the bacon, exactly. Fry it up in the pan.
Exactly. Quite literally.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah. So we got together for Palm Sunday, some of my family. And
what's her first name?
My cousin is Deanna.
Deanna, you said that.
And okay. So Deanna
Does
was kind
Deanna
enough to
live
make this
in
cake.
The vicinity?
Yeah,
of
she's
live
probably
it?
Listening. Yeah, she's
hi, Deanna.
She's with child now, so she probably keeps odd hours.
How old is her child?
No, she's expecting.
Oh, which child? How far along is she?
I think she's due in August.
Well, she can cook.
Oh, yeah. No, and she's quite an accomplished baker.
But wait. We can talk the politics and all that.
I got four hours. Yeah,
does she cook meals or it's just bakery items?
You know, no, she does pretty well with the meals as well.
Like
but,
what?
I'm trying to think what the last thing. You know, she made an interesting breakfast dish, like almost like an egg souffle recently. Mm. You know, so she can do quite a bit. She's very good.
So is she home now with the baby expecting?
I think she's still working.
She's still working.
But she's home enough to bake
cake
once in a while.
Deanna, the next time that she's sampling and cooking, you know, and there's a little extra,
I brought it in.
No, but not the cake. What else does she make?
Well, what are you requesting?
I'll take whatever.
You know, she also, maybe I shouldn't say this given how harsh you've been with the squatters, but she is a landlord-tenant attorney, and I think she almost only works with the tenants. She's probably representing some of the tenants.
Did you see Fonnie Willis defend? I think she was talking to a reporter of color because you could tell how comfortable she was. Did you see her revisionist history? Talking about how the case is going forward and all.
It's apparently going great. I had no idea. By the way, you mentioned that she's talking to a reporter of color. Yesterday, I was watching.
You can tell by the response.
I was watching CBS Sunday Morning, and that's one of the few network news shows that I still watch, broadcast network, and I enjoy it. I like the show a lot. They do a lot of interesting segments. It's fun, but I noticed this yesterday morning that they did something that they do every week,
which is there was a segment about a black person, the bird watcher from Central Park, Christian Cooper.
Yes.
And they had a black reporter interview him. Now, they always do that. They always put when the subject that's being interviewed is black, always a black person. And I think that
you want to know why?
Yeah, tell me.
Because the first of all, when I'm in those situations, I always refuse those assignments. Mm-hmm. Always. But you have to look at it from the newsroom's perspective. Every news station is accused of covering communities of color unfairly. Mm-hmm. So when there's a story and the subject happens to be of color, they say, get the black reporter.
Yeah,
and well, send the black reporter.
Right, but
that's offensive to the black reporter.
I think it's offensive to everybody.
It is, because right? We're so much more than just covering the black story.
No, but it's saying to the white reporter that might be better prepared and better experienced on that particular subject matter, hey, take a back seat. You're not black. And I'm sure this applies to, and I've seen them do this with Asians. And by the way, I'm sure every network does this. This is the only show that I watch, so I'm not singling out CBS. But I think it's offensive to the black reporter. I think it's offensive to the person being interviewed that you're so delicate that you can only be talked to by someone of your race. So,
well, I just recall once in television, the names will remain. There was a story in a housing project, and they said, Dominic, we're assigning you to the story. Go, 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 go. I said, I'm not going. I'm not doing it. Why not? Because I'm not, get one of your white reporters to go to the projects. I'm not doing this one. So
see, I've never had the political capital internally to say no to any of these assignments that I was given. It's glad I'm glad to sit next to
sometimes,
a guy that has.
Sometimes you do it at your own peril.
I bet. All right, let me ask you about this. So we're airing right now on WCBM in Baltimore, Maryland.
Great station,
and this is pretty surprising. It's home to one of the most competitive U.S. Senate races in the country right now. Nobody expected it to be competitive. And then all of a sudden, Larry, because this is a blue as can be state, the outgoing Democratic senator is not running for re-election. And Larry Hogan, the former governor, people were talking about him running for president as a third party candidate. He's a never Trump Republican. He announces, much to everyone's surprise, that he's running for Senate. And now, even though all the Trump people have hated him for the last 4 years, he looks like he could be the Republicans' best chance at winning the U.S. Senate. Now, I mention this because now all of a sudden, everyone assumed that the Democratic primary, which was going to be basically the general election, now it's competitive because they're going to have to take on the guy that's actually leading in the polls, Larry Hogan. Really interesting situation involving Congressman David Trone of Maryland. He's at a budget congressional hearing on Thursday, and he used a racial slur. He has apologized profusely, saying he misspoke and didn't know what the word meant. So he dropped the...
You don't believe that.
Well, I'm gonna give the context.
Okay.
And I want to hear your opinion. And to me, you know, I don't care if he's Democrat or Republican. He happens to be a Democrat. But to me, it makes no difference, right? Trone dropped a derogatory word for black people. And I'm going to say it once, just so folks know what we're talking about. Into a brief speech praising President Biden's tax proposals.
Wait. He doesn't say it himself in the soundbite?
Well, we actually don't have the sound.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we're working on it.
I'd say you do better than him.
Elias is busy still doing stuff for your show. We don't have him.
Just be careful using the term.
Understood,
be
right?
Careful.
So he dropped
I'm
this.
Warning you as a friend.
We're working on getting it. Anyway.
Okay.
So Trone dropped this derogatory word for black people into a brief speech praising President Biden's tax proposals towards the end of a very friendly exchange with the director of Office of Management Budget and Management. So it's not like there's anything acrimonious here. It's, you know, kumbaya, how great the Democratic economic agenda is for the people of the country. And after explaining that the corporate tax rates did not influence how he invested hundreds of millions of dollars in his national liquor company, Congressman Trone continued and said, quote, so this Republican jigaboo that it's the tax rate that's stopping business investment. It's just completely faulty by people who have never run a business. They've never been there. They don't have a clue what they're talking about. Now, this slur is among the derogatory terms, as you know, used to caricature black people. After being contacted by the Washington Post and every other media outlet in Washington, Trone completely apologized. He said, quote, "Today, while attempting to use the word bugaboo in a hearing, I misspoke and mistakenly used a phrase that's offensive. Upon learning the meaning of the word, I was deeply disappointed to have accidentally used it, and I apologize." So that whole thing was Thursday and Friday. Over the weekend, there were scores of his colleagues, black Democratic colleagues that serve with him. They've now endorsed his opponent.
He's not going to make it politically.
He's done.
It's a term that he should have never used. He knew exactly what he was saying. So, like, here's the point I'm trying to make, right? You know, there's a lot of talk out there that Kim Kardashian's sex tape was leaked intentionally.
Yep.
Or by interest, I won't say who, but by interest on her behalf.
And you could understand the rationale, right?
And so sometimes newsmakers will say something outrageous just for the clicks, just for the guaranteed news coverage. He knew exactly what that term meant. And what he was really saying is that, so like, for example, when Mike Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York City, billionaire, came to a city hall press conference one day and we were hammering him, taking turns, just pounding him. And he says, none of you have ever made any money. I don't even know why I'm talking to you. Because in his world, he's a very successful billionaire. So what this guy was doing was he was
also a pretty wealthy guy. He was
right.
30 so, something million.
Right. And you got to tip your hat to
actually 110 million.
Well, I hope he enjoys that because he's going to need it because his political career is over. He should have never. Listen, I don't believe in focusing forever on people make mistakes. And I think race is played up too big in our country. But when you use that term, there's no coming back from that.
If people want to comment, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. But just play this out with me. So you think he meant to use that word, the J
possibly,
word.
Possibly. Possibly.
But why? I mean, clearly he's in a competitive race.
For attention.
Uh-huh.
To guarantee. Okay. When you're running for office and you can't get any media coverage, you've got to do something to shake it up. Something. And especially if you're not spending as much money. I don't know if he was self-financing his campaign.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I assume
probably. But he knew exactly what that term meant. It was not an accident. That's not a term that you use by mistake. Imagine me sitting up here going, oh, you know, blah, blah, boom.
You know,
not going to happen.
You know, I don't think he would have used the word intentionally. But here's what I do think. I think this was a Freudian slip, and this could be an indication that he uses this word regularly. I'll tell you honestly, up until a minute ago, I've never used the word in my life, no, in my whole life, because I've never had a reason to.
You know why I know that you're possibly correct? Because I've been around a lot of prominent African Americans in private, and they don't use that word, but they talk like, how dare you criticize me when I am highly successful and you're not? So for him to say now that he didn't know what the word meant, okay, let's put it to you this way, Frank. Can you imagine if a white candidate or politician had said that?
Well, David Trone is white.
Oh, I thought he was black.
No, he's white.
Oh, he's definitely done now.
But he's running, I think one of his opponents that he's running against is black.
So he's a white candidate, and he didn't know what the word meant?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Is it an honest mistake?
So do we go around using words that we don't know what they mean?
Well, he says he meant bugaboo, right? I mean, which makes more sense in the context that he was trying to explain it. But so you think regardless of the intent, he's done regardless.
Frank, you can put a fork in him. It's over. Okay. It's over. It's over. Whether it's intentional or not, it's over. You know, we live in a world where, unfortunately, words count. You know what I mean? And he's done. He's done.
800-848-9222. Thank you, Dominic Carter. We will see you tomorrow.
Thank you. Don't use the word again.
Got it. I'm done. I can only use it while you're here. That's the rule.
And not even then.
No, I'm bringing in an Asian person to use some Asian slurs.
But now. So wait, before you kick me out, tell Deanna.
Yeah.
that good luck with the baby. And the next time she cooks something for you, you know, and let her know I'll forgive her for representing tenants in court.
I don't think she represents squatters, in fairness, but I definitely think if the squatters need a lawyer, she's probably on
and to the rest of the staff, you got to get some of that cake.
It is good.
Ooh, it's really good.
Better you guys eating it than me. All right. Thank you, Dominic Carter. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment. So we do have the audio. Elias has found it. This is Congressman David Trone on Thursday in this budget hearing. I'll just play this once.
What you look at is, can you compete? Can you do it better than the other competitor? And with that, can you create a P&L statement that works? And the tax rate, that's after the P&L. It's never, ever once been a consideration. So this Republican jigaboo that, you know, it's a tax rate that's stopping business investment, it's just completely faulty.
Dominic, any, now that you've heard him say it, not me just reading his words, any difference of opinion?
He's done.
Done. All right. There you have it. All right. I'm curious. Look, obviously, you don't know what's in someone's mind. You don't know what's in someone's heart. I'm curious. I just played you what he said. He's apologized. I mean, forget about his politics. Let's say you love his politics. Let's say you hate his politics. Should that apology be accepted? Or should his whole political career, at least vis-a-vis this election cycle, really be done if he misspoke? I don't think he said it intentionally, that word. I think, as I said, that he makes a habit of using that word, and this was a Freudian slip. Because why would he say it? Why would he slip that in there? I don't think he would have said it intentionally. And I don't know. You tell me what you think. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Tony, you have an opinion on this?
You know, I don't, like you said, I don't know if it was intentional or you just don't know. You just have to watch what you say nowadays, okay?
Yeah, well, that's certainly for sure. Brian in Baltimore, you're actually going to vote in this U.S. Senate race. What do you think?
Well, I think it was a slip, but he curses a lot. He's a popular businessman in the state of Maryland, especially around central Maryland, Baltimore, and the Baltimore County area. He owns one of the largest liquor stores in the region, and he's currently in Congress. He's running. He's running as a Democrat against the county executive from PG County,
Angela Also Brooks.
Also Brooks, yeah. So he spent a lot of money. Within the last 3 months, he spent over like $5 million in ads. And so he's been trying to get his name popular. He's really progressive. And actually, Angela Alsobrooks Brooks is kind of, she's a Democrat, but she's more law and order type of Democrat, because once upon a time, she was a state prosecutor. Ultimately, whoever wins between those two will be running against our Republican governor,
Larry Hogan.
Former governor Larry Hogan. Right.
So Brian, but do you have a favorite in this race? Do you like anybody, or is there anybody that you're leaning towards?
I'm registered as a Democrat, but I lean more conservative, so I'm going to vote for Angela Alsobrooks. And then but I'm also in the primaries coming up in April, but in the general election, I'm voting for Larry Hogan.
Did this change your view? Were you leaning towards Trone and this changed you to Alsobrooks, or were you always Alsobrooks?
No, I was always Alsobrooks. The funny thing is, I'm running similar circles as David Trone, so he actually has a campaign sign in my yard because I live in a popular area. I live in a corner house on the main street, so people see a lot of politicians post their signs there. And I'm not a fan of his. Like he's too progressive.
All right, Brian, I appreciate the. So tell me, what do you think? Do you think he said that intentionally, or was this an accident? And even though you may not be voting for him, should he be forgiven? Should we accept his apology?
The problem is, in this state, things Democrats do, they can get away with. Had it been somebody on the Republican side, they would have been trying to crucify him. So it's kind of like, it's not
well,
even
right.
Been
well, that's what I'm trying to ask you to do. I'm trying to ask you to put his partisanship aside and just based on what he said here, should he be, and I hate to use this term on Holy Week, but should he be crucified or should he be given a pass here?
I think they should. I would love to see him get crucified, because I get tired of one side being able to do whatever they want, and then if you're a Republican, it's the minute you you pass gas, you get burnt up.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. I can see, in spite of me asking him to put partisanship aside, the first thing he says is, well, he deserves it because he's a Democrat. We're not putting partisanship aside. And this is the last, I think, racial-related issue that I'm going to mention for the morning. This is the front page of Saturday's New York Times. I am a little annoyed because I didn't get to finish reading Sunday's New York Times, and I have no idea where my wife put it. And she was asleep when I left last night, and I was not going to wake her up to ask where she put my newspapers, but she's just a cleaning machine. She's cleaning and cleaning and straightening up and straightening up, and there's only so many places I could look for the newspapers. I couldn't find it. So I'm resorting to, I could still read it online, but still. Front page of Saturday's New York Times. Headline, ACLU is accused of fighting free speech. Not fighting for free speech, is accused of fighting free speech. It has to do with an attorney by the name of Kate Oh, who happens to be Asian. She's a Korean-American. And she was no one's idea. This is what the Times describes her as. She was no one's idea of a get-along-to-go-along employee. That's how they put it. Get-along-to-go-along. Isn't it go-along-to-get-along? That's how I always use it. But anyway, the Times says get-along-to-go-along. During her 5 years as a lawyer for the American Civil Liberties Union, she was an unsparing critic of her superiors, known for sending long, blistering emails to human resources complaining about what she described as a hostile workplace. Can I tell you, I hate people like this. I hate people like this. Everybody's got to complain. Do you know how many times in my life I have complained to human resources about anyone else? In all the companies that I've worked for, zero. I don't understand the need to run to HR. But this was who you're dealing with here. She was, I'm annoyed by her, never having known who she was. I can imagine what she must have been like for the poor people that worked with her on a daily basis. So you have an idea of how annoying she must have been to her coworkers. So she was an unsparing critic of her superiors. By the way, that's another thing that I've never done. In my whole life, I've never complained about my bosses to HR, but whatever. So she would send these long, blistering emails to HR complaining about what she described as a hostile workplace. She considered herself a whistleblower. You know, we've got to get a whistleblower sound effect that sounds a little bit like the PC Richard and Son. It can't be that. Because I don't think they want their associated with, whistleblowers. But maybe we could change one bar of it. You know how Ice Ice Baby and Under Pressure, there's just one minor bar difference between the two. Or Want a New Drug and Who You Gonna Call Ghostbusters. It's just like one or two bar. That's what we need. We need something that sounds like, But it's something a little different. Anyway, so she considered herself a whistleblower and advocate for other women in the office, drawing unflattering attention to an environment she said was rife with sexism. She's talking about the workplace at the ACLU, so it's not exactly a bed of roses. Burdened by unmanageable workloads and stymied by a fear-based culture. Now, what do you think happens to people like this? They get fired. Management always finds a way to fire people like this. Always. So then the tables turned and Miss O was the one slapped with an accusation of serious misconduct. The ACLU said her complaints about several superiors, all of whom were black, used racist stereotypes, and she was fired in May of 2022. Now I'm reading this. I'm saying, whoa. What are these racist stereotypes? And, you know, I don't want to use what comes to your mind when you think black people and racial stereotypes, but I'm thinking, oh, did she say this? Did she say that? No, she said none of this. So the ACLU acknowledges that Miss O, who's Korean American, never used any kind of racial slur. She wasn't using these David Trone type words. But the group says that her use of certain phrases, and I was going to ask Dominic about this too, but he wanted to talk about cake instead, which I understand. The group says that her use of certain phrases and words demonstrated a pattern of willful anti-black animus. In one instance, according to court documents, she told a black superior that she was, quote, afraid to talk with him. In another, she told a manager that their conversation was, quote, chastising. And in a meeting, she repeated a satirical phrase likening her boss's behavior to suffering beatings. Now, does this language add up to racism, or is she just speaking harshly about bosses who happen to be black? That question is now the subject of an unusual, unfair labor practice case brought against the ACLU, not by Ms. O directly, but by the National Labor Relations Board, which has accused the ACLU of retaliating against Ms. O. Now, I think this case is so interesting because the ACLU is the type of organization that jumps on everybody that doesn't exactly do the right thing. And now they're being in the crossfires for in the crosshairs for not doing the right thing in terms of crossing all the right T's and dotting all the right I's. I don't think any of these emails were racist. This was someone that was a problem employee that was annoying to everybody in the office, especially her bosses, and they looked for a way to get rid of her. Nothing she said is racist. I think in these emails, they're using this as an excuse to fire her. I'm not saying that I wouldn't have found a way to fire Ms. O, but I wouldn't have accused her of using racial stereotypes. So I'd love your thoughts on this. I have to tell you, I think the National Labor Relations Board has a very strong case here, and I wouldn't be shocked to see the ACLU knocked down a couple of pegs because I think they fired this woman wrongfully. I don't believe that she was using racial stereotypes at all because she's afraid, because a conversation is chastising. You know, when you have an abusive boss, and I have no idea whether she did or not, but when you have an abusive boss, it's not unusual to be afraid if they're being threatening, being loud, being belligerent. If you have a boss that is chastising, what's wrong with saying chastising? If you're getting verbal beatings, what's the matter with using the term beatings? You know, I read all the emails that were excerpted in this New York Times article, and there's nothing at all that's inappropriate that wouldn't apply to a white boss as well as a black boss. So I'm curious where you see this this case going, but a lawyer representing the ACLU said during a legal proceeding last year that it was irrelevant whether Ms. O bore no racist ill will. Now, think of that argument. It doesn't matter if she's racist or not. The fact that she's still using racial stereotypes in her email, it doesn't matter whether she's racist. That's now the world that the ACLU is occupying. They want to be able to fire you for using accidentally racist language. You know, in the era of AI and filters and this and that, and this is going to sound like I'm joking, but this is only a wee bit of hyperbole, and I don't think this is a joke. Can we get an AI email filter that will automatically de-racist your emails so that you can take out any term that could possibly be offensive to anybody? Because we know what those emails would look like. They would look like a blank page because something could be offended by offensive to anybody. But to me, this is just a ludicrous explanation by the ACLU that it is irrelevant whether Miss O bears racist ill will. All that mattered, he said, was that her black colleagues were offended and injured. This, if the ACLU is not reprimanded harshly here, this is a frightening world that we have now entered. Because what we're saying now is, it doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what your intent was. It only matters if someone is offended. I don't mind telling you that while Miss O is absolutely the woman that I would not want to be sharing an office with and would not want to be working with, I am absolutely rooting against the ACLU on this one. I'm going to be very eager to see where this case goes. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on either of these. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the Construction Accident Lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice. Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. This is obviously the late, great Whitney Houston. And this is a birthday bumper music selection from my friend Christina Atkinson, who is celebrating her birthday today, who is actually technically my godwife. What does that mean? I think that's the term. She and I are godparents to the same little girl. No, she's not a little girl anymore. She's grown up considerably. Penelope Magliacca, and Christina's sister Katie, who's an old friend of mine going back many years, is Penelope's mom, and my friend Anthony is Penelope's dad. So I don't get to see Christina as often as I would like, but I'm hoping she has a great birthday today and that all of her wishes come true today and always. All right, going to get to your calls in a moment, 800-848-9222. One of the things that is frustrating in being a fan of local radio and as being someone that's been a participant in radio for a long time is that the idea of preserving broadcasts is relatively new. We've only been on the air 4 years of this show, and there are a lot of shows that we've done here that, because of one reason or another and prior staff that we had working on the show, is lost and we'll never get back. Now, that's one thing, but then there's stuff that I've done on the radio, and humbly speaking, a lot of great stuff from 10 years ago, which is gone forever. Back then, there was a big debate about whether or not radio shows should even be podcast. And I know it sounds silly now, but at the time, the debate in radio stations was, Well, do we want to let people podcast? Isn't that another opportunity for competition? Aren't we sending the message that they don't have to listen to the radio show if they can just get what they want, whenever they want? Now, the thinking is, all right, of course, every radio show has to podcast. So anyway, what's been frustrating to me is that so many of the great radio shows that I've grown up listening to over the years, and mostly local shows, they're gone. They're gone, and unless somebody happened to be pressing record on a tape recorder or something, they're never going to be found. And as frustrating, and you know, it's one of the reasons I'm trying so hard to get my external hard drive working again, because there's a lot of stuff that I've done over the course of 20 years on there, and it's not just me, but others, that if this external hard drive is not able to be accessed again, then it's just all that stuff is gone. As frustrating as it is in the world of radio, and it is, a similar thing is right now happening in motion pictures. There is an entire era of independent cinema which could be lost due to poor preservation of digital archives, changing formats, file corruption, and lost physical storage media. Again, this is, I feel like it's my external hard drive all over again, might mean that thousands of films of the last few decades are disappearing, especially smaller budget ones. One archivist told The Hollywood Reporter that we find issues with every single show or film that we try to preserve. Similar archival issues impacted Hollywood's early era, resulting in the permanent loss of many silent pictures and B-movies, including Alfred Hitchcock's second feature, The Mountain Eagle. I mean, you think about that. It's a work of art that's gone. It would almost be like a Da Vinci painting that's just vanished. It's just gone to history. And now experts worry that more recent films from the last 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, not stuff from the 20s and 30s, but more recent film could similarly become true goners. Really interesting article about it in The Hollywood Reporter. I would encourage you to check it out. I'll link to it on my Facebook page, but this is a real bummer. And to me, it's just a reminder of how ephemeral a lot of what goes on in media is. We don't think of it this way anymore because we kind of think, all right, if you miss it on TV, you can catch it on YouTube a little bit later. If you miss the radio show, you can catch the podcast a little bit later. And, you know, a lot of times that's true. And I guess it's more true now than it was 10 or 15 years ago, but it's not always true. And at least what we're seeing in cinema is, this is a silent fire. Decaying digital movie and TV show files are a legitimate Hollywood crisis. And a lot of the industry professionals are sweating the possibility that many of these digital files will eventually become unusable. And this is going to be an archival tragedy reminiscent of the celluloid era of the 20s and 30s. And this is bad news. Bad news all around. I hope I don't know what they can do to stop this, but it's pretty frightening, I think, as somebody that likes movies and likes history. 800-848-9222. Al in Yonkers has been waiting. Hi, Al.
Hey, Frank. Good morning. You know, the congressman from Maryland, he does have a problem, a political problem, because he's running for the Senate. And his opponent is a person of color.
Right.
And as you know, Maryland is a lot of African Americans, and in a Democratic primary, usually the more progressive or liberal candidate fares better a lot of the times. So I think he's got a problem, but sometimes you can recover what you say. We saw back in 84 with the Reverend Jesse Jackson when he was running for president. He made a comment that was determined to be derogatory, mm-hmm. but he recovered. I remember watching, I lived briefly in Long Island in the 1980s, and I was watching Nightline, and I saw in front of my eyes as a teenager around 18 or 19 when the assistant general manager of the Dodgers made a racist comment. And I knew then, even watching, I said, that guy is finished. And I was a young guy. The next day, he was done. Howard Cosell and Jimmy the Greek, they couldn't recover because they made racist comments. So sometimes you
can't. No. Howard Cosell absolutely recovered, right? And first of all, I don't believe that what Howard Cosell said was intended to be racist. I mean, if he worked at the ACLU, maybe they would judge him differently. But I mean, there are many documented instances of him using that term to apply to white people as well.
Okay.
In my experience.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I just remember there was a big controversy about it.
Yeah, no, you're right about that, Al. Thank you. And we'll get to the rest of you in just a moment. 800-848-9222. Speaking of films, it reminds me, I almost watched the whole William Shatner documentary this weekend. So here's what happened. So they sent me a screener, and it's one of those things where you have to click a link and then type in a password that only you get so that you can watch it. And honestly, you know, I don't want to watch the film on my computer screen. I want to watch it on my television set. And I have a smart television set, so there's no reason I shouldn't be able to watch it on my television set. And I can't figure, I don't have email on my television set, but what we've done a couple of times is, my wife has an iPhone, and she has been able to connect her phone to our television set, and it is, you know, it is connected, you know, that's the de facto. Now, I had about 45 minutes to an hour before I had some friends come over for lunch. I said, let me enjoy this documentary for a little bit. Rachel agrees to let me, she's in the middle of a FaceTime conversation with her sister who just had a baby. They're talking all about mom stuff. And I said, honey, can you put this on your phone and connect it to the TV? I'll give you my phone to call Sharon back. Great. So we're now in a situation where I have friends coming over for lunch. I give Rachel my phone to talk to Sharon, and she gives me her phone, which she has connected to the TV. And I start watching this documentary, and I'm enjoying it. 10, 15 minutes in, 20 minutes in. Good stuff. There's some new footage that I have not seen. At least in the first 15 to 20 minutes, there's nothing that I've really learned necessarily about William Shatner. But I'm liking it. I'm digging it. I'm liking his candidness with the camera. I'm liking some of the clips they're showing. And I'm just kind of getting warmed up. And then my wife says, oh, so-and-so is calling you. So-and-so is calling you. The people that were calling me to have lunch, they're calling my phone, which now my wife has, and it's interrupting her conversation with Sharon. And obviously, you know, she's already inconvenienced by giving me her phone. So I pause the documentary. I call all these people back. And I said, all right, no, this is where you're going. All right, we're ordering. What do you want? Okay. Now I have to try and reset up the documentary again. Okay. Against all odds, I finally get the documentary going. I'm able to watch another 10 or 15 minutes. And then I had people over. And then the rest of the weekend was just such a whirlwind. You know, I was just, Noam Layden asked me off air on Friday, hey, what are you doing this weekend? And I gave him, you know, what I was doing Friday, what I was doing Saturday. And then I start by saying, and then on Sunday, and he says, holy moly, you're not even up to Sunday yet? That's how much you have going on? Yes. Yes, it is. And I'll tell you another thing. I'll tell you what I am just about done with. People making me feel bad for not recognizing them. So Friday was William Shatner's 93rd birthday, as you know. So I wanted to get this new comic book. I saw, you know, Shatner on a bunch of the talk shows. You know, he's promoting this documentary. He's on Kelly Clarkson. I was watching him on there. He was good. saw him on Jimmy Kimmel. We played some of the clips of Jimmy Kimmel. And he's on the front page of this comic book. I think the comic is called America's Finest, but it's the Justice League, which features Batman and Superman. And Shatner's on the cover. And he's on the basically in charge of the Justice League. Batman and telling Batman and Superman what to do, which is kind of cool. So I thought to myself, you know, it's been a while since I've been to the comic book store. Let me, maybe years, actually. I said, why don't I see if I can buy two copies of this? I'll keep one as a collector's item and one I'll read to find out why William Shatner is interacting with Batman and Superman, right? So I take Carmine with me, who's 2 years old, to the comic book store. And immediately, you know, he really likes the cartoon Bluey. Immediately, he runs in and finds a whole section. I don't know how he found it. He's got like this radar of books all about Bluey. And he wants to read them all. No, he can't read them all. All right, have one, have one. Okay, you can pick one out. He picks one. We get it. Okay. And so I'm looking around for this Justice League book. It's a big comic book store. And I go to the person that looks like they're in charge, intending to ask them what the story is here. I'm walking up to the person and I start saying, all right, you know, I'm sorry, I'm looking for, and meanwhile, I have a very hyper 2-year-old that I'm trying to wrangle and keep from destroying everything. And I say to this person who's managing the comic book store, I say, all right, I'm looking for this Justice League comic book, the most recent edition. And instead of helping me with my request, he says, I can't believe you don't recognize me. And I'm looking at this person and you know what? I don't. So I don't recognize this person, but what am I going to say? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't recognize you. It's been a while. It has been at least 10 or 11 years since I saw this person. Person's got a full beard now. Did not have a full beard when I saw him. I hope this person's not listening. It has put on at least 30 or 40 pounds since last I saw them. Looks totally different. Totally different. So why do that? Now, and I did recognize him once I heard his voice. And I know this person. He's a nice guy. Obviously, we were not close enough for us to keep in touch more than once every decade or so. But why do you do that to somebody? Why do that where you make them feel bad for not recognizing you? I go to my wife when I'm coming home. Hey, I'm not sure if you remember me, Frank Morano. You know, I remind everybody that I'm who I am. I don't expect anybody to know who I am. I had to remind Curtis 3 times last night that I was that we knew each other. So that was Friday. Fine, we have a nice interaction. The comic book was out of stock. I had to order it. So I'm looking forward to our next interaction. Okay. Then Saturday night, I'm going to the Blue Lives Matter event. And, you know, I was at one table. Great event, by the way. And it's, you know, it's sad. You hear about all these stories of police officers being killed, but you also hear about these incredible stories of heroism. But I'm always happy to support that event and support the families of fallen police officers. But great job by Joe Imperatrice, the head of that organization and the founder of that organization. So I'm at one table and then I see a friend of mine. I said, oh, what table are you at? A table, whatever, so-and-so. I said, oh, okay, I'll go come say hello to all the guys there. And I walk over and I say hi to this person that I recognize. Hi to that person. A couple of people I don't know. Hi, nice to meet you. I'm Frank. And then my friend says, all right, you know John, right? No, I don't think I know him. And I shake hands with John. And then he comes over to me and says, you don't recognize me, do you? No! It's been 12 years since I saw you. A separate guy. Separate guy. 12 years since I saw him. He's like making me feel bad for not recognizing him. Sorry. Nice guy. I wish I did recognize him. But why do that to people? My pro tip for you is don't do that to people. There is no reason to make someone feel bad for not recognizing you. They feel bad enough that they don't. How about a polite reminder instead? So that's my view. All right. Two open lines if you want to comment. 800-848-9222. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. It's the Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Song, Stevie Wonder, it's another Christina Atkinson pick, but this is another one of those songs that's overused at weddings, bar mitzvahs, and the like. I can almost see the photo montage playing or Sweet 16s, that's another one. It's just, we need more versatility in these songs, but it's a great song. I'm not taking anything away from it, but it's a little overused. All right, those of you that are on hold, I will get to you. I read a lot of the coverage over the last couple of days over Princess Kate, and obviously I'm very sorry to see that she has cancer, and all the media people that were talking about that should, you know, the mocking her, making fun of her, should hang their head in shame. But I also saw a headline yesterday that got no attention. No attention, and in the grand scheme of things, is much more important than what's happening with the royal family. I'll tell you what it is in a bit. Until next hour, help control the pet population. Get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.